This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. On the line with we've been talking about the Green New Deal. We've been talking about the rot in the Republican Party. We've been all kinds of really cool topics over the last little bit. But right now, I am so happy to have on the line with us Ed Asner, Phil Proctor, and Sam Joseph. There is a new play that is being performed at this weekend in Newport, California. For tickets, nhhsdrama.com, and we'll tweet this out as well, and then godhelpus.net is the website. And Ed Asner is playing God and moderating a discussion between a liberal and a conservative, and I've got all three of you on the line. I want to start with Ed. Ed, you literally, as you know, were the first guest 16 years ago on this program. The first guest I ever had was Ed Asner, and it's so great to have you back with us. Ed, welcome.
Yeah, then you deserted me, you rotten sink.
Say what?
Then you deserted me, you rotten sink.
Then I deserted you. I hope you don't think that.
I mean, No, I don't.
I love you, Ed. Yeah, you do need to get a little closer to your microphone, though. It's hard to hear you. So you're playing God. Tell us about the play.
Well, it's... God is somewhat comical. Are you hearing me?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. And he finds a couple. He brings together a couple who were a very tight couple at one time. She being a right winger, he being a left winger, to discuss various topics of the day. And in the course of their discussion, written by these two writing geniuses that you've got on the program. God finds that the art of compromise is totally non-existent. He tries to bring them together and then finally finds a solution to the problem.
Fascinating. It sounds like a marvelous play. Phil Proctor's also on the line with us. Phil was one of the people who got me through my teenage years as one of the founding members of the Fire Sign Theater, a group that, I am still quoting Fire Sign Theater skits all the time. And, I've known Phil for years. Phil, welcome to the program. Are you playing the liberal or the conservative in this play?
Well, I'm actually not performing in this play. Sam and I co-authored it and designed it in such a way that each venue can use good actors from the local pot, if you will, mm-hmm. and perform the play from podiums, reading the material, acting the material. So the rehearsal period is shorter, and Ed is the anchor for all of this. So it gives other actors an opportunity to approach this material and bring their own unique personalities to it.
That's marvelous. And Ed Asner is God. I mean, that's just absolutely perfect.
Sam Joseph. Typecasting, of course.
Yes. Sam Joseph, you helped write this. And tell us about yourself and what brought you to this, and where did this idea come from?
Well, I'm sort of a political chunky, and Phil and I have written a children's book together, and he also co-starred in a film, Window of Opportunity, that was on your show with John Densmore and Phil a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
Basically, yes, it is typecasting. The show has been going around the country, so we play in different cities. We had 900 people when we did it in Idaho, of all places.
Wow.
And you asked me a question. I forgot. Tell me that.
Well, where did the idea come from?
It just seems to me that things are more tribal and ugly than they've ever been. In fact, I wrote something for Daily Coast recently about why it's so difficult for people who don't like Trump to accept his supporters, even though we could more accept people who supported Reagan and Bush.
Right.
And it just seems to me that we are so tribal and so distant from what is reality and what is truth that we need to find a way to talk to each other, even if we disagree. And
that's
so,
right. And that was the thing that brought me together on the project, because we were, even as we were writing a children's book, we were debating these issues that are tearing us apart.
Right.
And we said, we got to write about this. We got to see if we can find some solution, some way to reveal to people that there is a possibility that we can compromise.
Yeah.
And that's where the play came from.
That's fascinating. That's Phil Proctor, adding to what Sam Joseph was saying. Ed Asner, as God, you're the person who is performing in every one of these cities. What is your sense, and so you're out there and you're interacting with the people, what's your sense of the political zeitgeist of America? You and I have talked politics, you know, on the air and off the air for years, but it's been a while since we've talked, for which I'm sorry. And I'm curious your take on where our country is at. I don't think we've talked since Trump became president.
Well, I'm very worried that being so anti-Trump as I am, and everyone around me, that I look at Trump supporters as being rare fossils of a strange genre. I do not understand these people. I understand the primal urges which led them to say hurrah to Trump, but then when they actually fall into lockstep, I then say, how can they continue walking in lockstep when they see the perfidy that he creates? And yet they do. So I have great fear for our country, that I'm inclined to wonder, will it take a second civil war to finally find out who we are and where we are?
God forbid.
And who will win if we have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
This is Sam?
This is Sam again. Yeah, I think that's part of the reason we wrote this. Look, when Phil and I were working on it, I sent it to an old dear friend of mine who's a Republican and his wife, and we got notes from them. Because
yeah,
we wanted
right.
to make sure, even though all three of us are quite progressive, that the conservative point of view was presented honestly and respectfully. And we've done that, I believe. I think most people who've seen it say, yeah, it does show both sides and both sides' arguments pretty clearly.
That's.
And this is Phil again. I want to add that we also are regularly updating the play.
Yes.
For each performance in various parts of the country. We have to stay on top of the fast-breaking news, and I emphasize the word breaking, in order to make sure that the play is pertinent and speaks to everybody. Remember, the play is called God Help Us. God Help Us. That was the motivation, again, that caused us to put our heads together and try to write a play that could emphasize both our differences and our togethernesses in this strange cultural society we live in now.
Ed,
with a second play. Hello.
Ed, speak up, Ed.
Follow that up with a second play titled, Is Anybody Out There? In response to God Help Us. Then the title of the second play would be, Is Anybody Out There? Questioning whether we can really reach out to God if he exists.
Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating one. I am hopeful that you guys come to Portland so I can see this thing.
Actually, we may be coming to Portland. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, well,
that's wonderful.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, well, when you do, you know, come on in studio. Ed Asner, Phil Proctor, Sam Joseph. The website is godhelpus.net. The play is God Help Us. Ed Asner playing God. Check it out. It's in Newport, California this weekend.
Type in Ed Asner in Newport and Google and you'll find it.
There you go.
And God bless you, Tom.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. Stick around. And welcome back. Let's see here. Gary in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. As far as the Green New Deal, as far as talking to the conservatives, I think we have to dial back the lofty claims of people are 100% responsible and there's a 100% solution. The practicality of it is where you get them, okay? they're always complaining about the cost of education and the cost of government. Well, let's start with all the public schools. Let's start with the park district and the government buildings. Okay.
By start with, what do you mean?
As far as solar panel them being energy neutral.
Sure.
Okay. That's going to reduce your tax burden. It's going to reduce the property tax burden as far as the schools. So you may not have them on every house, and as a former carpenter, I can tell you, not every house is perfectly suited for solar panels. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, you would, as a taxpayer, you would see a benefit, okay, by going with this. And if we're only 25% responsible for global warming, well then, okay, let's bring back the CCC and replant these trees that were burned down in California.
Yep.
Let's pick up where Roosevelt left off with the WPA and have the supertension lines in the same right-of-way corridor as the high-speed rail, okay, allowing us to redistribute the electricity produced. Okay, you want to change politics in this country? Okay, go ahead and have a Jeff Bezos or whatever front the money for a solar plant, solar cell plant in Huntington, West Virginia. Give that coal company state.
See, you wouldn't need Jeff. You don't need Bezos or anybody else, Gary. If our federal government changed our trade policies to favor, and Trump has done this to a very small extent, but he's done it in a way that is not going to be permanent. Nobody's going to build a factory based on that. Congress has to do it and do it right. But if we changed our trade policies to favor domestic manufacture, number one, and then we simultaneously drop $300 billion worth of annual subsidies for the fossil fuel industry and create $300 billion a year worth of subsidies for people who are using solar panels for solarizing their homes and things, then you would see, every small businessman and even big businesses in the United States jumping into, you would see factories popping up all over the country to build solar cells.
The whole idea of Buy American, okay, you were talking about tariffs. My idea is an import tax.
Yeah, okay? Well, that's what a tariff is.
Yes, but it's by a different name, and you don't get into tariff wars and trade wars. Okay, we can regulate our own taxes.
Yeah. By the way, most other countries do this, Gary, is with VAT taxes. Now that tariffs are out of fashion, and we don't have a VAT tax, we really need one in this country. Gary, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, so the new Attorney General, by the way, that conversation with God and his two writers, with Ed Asner and Phil and what's the third guy's name? Sam, that's right. Raises an interesting question. Have you successfully had a conversation about issues with a conservative where you arrived at a consensus? I have them on this show all the time, debates and discussions. I did, we opened the show with one today in the first hour. I rarely achieve consensus. And that's why I'm looking forward to seeing the play. This sounds fascinating. So anyhow, just toss that out there. And if you've had that experience, give us a shout and share it with us. What was the consensus you found with a conservative? That said, I want to talk about the Mueller report for a minute. Now that Bill Barr is the Attorney General, he has been sworn in. He's running he's running the Justice Department. He's the Attorney General of the United States, and he's the guy who decides now absolutely everything that Robert Mueller does. He's the guy who's going to approve or disapprove subpoenas. He's the guy who can activate or end a grand jury. he's the guy who basically is Mueller's boss and can say, okay, you got to do this or you can't do that, or you got to start here or stop here. And keep in mind, this is the same Bill Barr who back in 1992, when George Herbert Walker Bush was 2 weeks away from leaving the White House, this was the week of Christmas of 1992, Lawrence Walsh, the special counsel, that generation's version of Robert Mueller, was looking into the crimes that had been committed by the Reagan administration, conspiring with the Iranians to hold the hostages, to flip the election, to get to so that Jimmy Carter would lose the election and Ronald Reagan would be president, selling weapons to Iran in exchange for that, you know, arms for hostages, and then taking the money from those weapon sales, those illegal weapon sales. Congress had passed a law saying it's illegal for American weapons manufacturers to sell weapons to Iran. Ronald Reagan did it anyway. He broke the law. And George Herbert Walker Bush was involved in that. They were both looking at going to prison. There had already been two guilty pleas and one conviction, and three other people were on the hook. Elliot Abrams was one of those guys, one of those war criminals involved in Iran-Contra. And Bill Barr was Attorney General. Ronald Reagan had put Bill Barr in as Attorney General, a very young man at the time. And Bill Barr sat down with George Herbert Walker Bush and said, you know, you want to shut this investigation down? You want to avoid going to jail? Simply pardon everybody. Just pardon everybody. Pardon all five of them. Pardon Elliot Abrams. Pardon Caspar Weinberger. I forget who the other three were. I think Ollie North was one of them. Just pardon them all. And Lawrence Walsh, the special prosecutor, will not be able to continue with this investigation because they've got pardons. He has no leverage over them anymore. There's no more case. And you get to retire and not go to jail and everything's good. That's what Bill Barr, and by the way, they did that. They did that on Christmas Day. And the New York Times, screaming headline across three quarters of the front page, giant headline, all caps, three lines, Attorney General, shuts down investigation, issues pardons. That's what Bill Barr did in 1992, Christmas of 1992. You can look it up in the archives in New York Times and Washington Post if you're subscribers. Just go back and look at the Christmas Day front page. It'll blow your mind. That's Bill Barr. That's the guy that the Senate just confirmed and that Trump just swore in as his Attorney General. That's the guy who is now going to be, who is now, as of, this week, running the Mueller investigation. And CNN is reporting now, today, that Mueller is going to have to finish his investigation and issue his report next week. Now, we have no idea if this is because Bill Barr said to him, this is what you're going to do, buddy. I'm putting an end to this thing right now. Get out what you've got, and that's it. Or was Robert Mueller always figuring, oh, this is a pretty good time to wrap it up? The other thing that I find interesting is that it seems to me, and I could be wrong on this, and if your understanding this is different than mine, let me know. But it seems that every time Robert Mueller drops a really big one, an indictment or whatever, it's while Trump is out of the country. And next week, Trump is going to Vietnam to sit down with his good buddy, the murderous dictator Kim Jong-un. So, is there something there? I don't know. I'm just, it's just like one of those kind of strange coincidence things. But Matthew Whitaker now, it sure looks like, lied to Congress when he said he didn't try to interfere in any investigations of Trump. And Bill Barr applied for the job, basically, by saying that the whole Mueller thing was a witch hunt, or words to that effect. And his main job qualification was that he prevented Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush from going to jail over Iran-Contra by issuing pardons, strategically issuing pardons. I'm willing to bet that within a few months, you're going to see Paul Manafort being pardoned. But we'll see. We'll see. What do you think? Pick up your calls after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
A lot in the news, a lot to cover. We'll get there right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. Somebody tweeted to me, and I'm sorry I don't have it right in front of me right now. It was a tweet. They were tweeting somebody else's tweet that was an excerpt from Andrew McCabe's book, the former director of the FBI, or acting director of the FBI, who is now on book tour and is talking about how Trump might be a Russian asset, blah, blah, blah. And I don't mean to minimize that. I mean, it's just that all this other insane stuff. And this is from page 136 of McCabe's new book. He was in a meeting in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. And this is a quote. Then the president talked about Venezuela. That's the country we should be going to war with, Trump said. They have all that oil, and they're right in our back door. So this was last year, a year and a half ago, in the White House, in the Oval Office, Donald Trump saying, hey, let's plan on going to war with Venezuela. And now, you know, speculation that this is going to be his 2020 reelection strategy is to start a war in our hemisphere. Meanwhile, a lot of the people who work at CNN are really upset about this. I tweeted out an article about it from, I think, the Daily Beast, or it might have been Daily Kos. I think it was the Daily Kos piece I tweeted out. The headline over in the Daily Beast, CNN staffers demoralized by hiring a GOP operative to oversee 2020 coverage. The person who is going to be supervising the election coverage on CNN from like next week going all the way through the election in November is a woman by the name of Sarah Isger, I-S-G-U-R, I assume that's how it's pronounced, and she's a Republican operative. She was an advisor to Ted Cruz. She was an advisor to Mitt Romney. She was the deputy campaign manager for Carly Fiorina. And she was the spokesperson for Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General's Department of Justice. And she is going to, quote, guide the TV and digital coverage of the 2020 election, occasionally offering on-screen analysis. This is the person CNN put in charge of this? A nakedly Republican operative? Seriously? I mean, I'm just shocked. You know, you would think that for something as sensitive as election coverage, that they would at the very least get somebody who, you know, actually is a journalist, actually understands reporting, and well, I need not rant further. I think that's pretty much it. Wendy in Pataskala, Ohio. Am I saying that right, Wendy?
Yeah, you got it right this time, Tom.
Hey, what's up?
Well, you know, I heard you ask the question about consensus with the conservatives.
Yes, if Wendy, if you could get your mouth closer to the microphone, I'd appreciate it.
Can you hear me better?
Yep.
Okay. So I once had a very odd conversation with a Trumpy. In fact, he was in my house because he was installing my floors. And I didn't even know if I was going to make it through with this guy because I couldn't even listen to your show because he was offended by anything that was not, or, well, anything that he would have said was liberal, I guess. So
yeah.
I couldn't listen to the radio. I couldn't watch TV or anything while he was in my house. But I was so determined to get those floors installed. But at one point, you know, I guess I started asking him about himself and about his life and how he got to be, you know, doing the type of work he does. And slowly he really did start telling me about himself and about his hobbies. And one of the things he liked was photography. And he loved, you know, nature. And he loved going to parks. Every weekend he would go to the parks and take photographs, these beautiful photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, at one point somehow we got on the topic of whales and how, you know, they were dying off or something, or there was a problem at that time with the beaching. And I said to him, you know, every time I hear about something like that, it just breaks my heart. And he looked at me. I could not believe it. He said, I feel the same way. You know, I mean, I actually found this connection with this Trumpy over nature and how much he really cares about nature, and I was thinking, wow, that's really a crossroads for
that's
people
marvelous.
Of different politics is nature, because I think Trumpies or conservatives, you know, we're all Americans in that respect, that we all love the environment, you know, when it gets down to it, and we enjoy, you know, things like going to the parks. I mean, that's something everybody seems to share, I think.
Yeah.
And so I understood then that the environment's really important to him. So it's probably important to a lot of Trumpies and conservatives. And to me, that's something that we should be playing up more.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
everybody cares.
Yeah, and Nixon figured that out, and he did his whole phony, I mean, you know, while in the background, he was, you know, vetoing implementation legislation for the EPA, and he was gutting the EPA, gutted their budget in the second year, stuff like that. But he talked a good line about the environment, because even Republicans have to breathe air and drink water, and they get it. Wendy, thank you for the call. Cannon, fascinating story. Cannon in Oroville, Washington. Hey, Cannon, what's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Tom. I just, you know, I was interested in some great points right there. The inconsistencies from the top regarding, you know, funding the Green New Deal and all that stuff. And you, notwithstanding the notion that the end game strategy of those in power is maybe just to let it all fall apart, I kind of question why is it that, you know, we have an oil infrastructure and we have a materials infrastructure, and most of that materials infrastructure is fueled by the very feedstocks, the inputs of big oil, and they could make
and coal
probably as much money, you know, because their materials go into making this green technology, or their feed inputs, which they supply the whole country with. And so I'm like, you know, I'm seeing you know, if
it's starting to happen, Cannon. There was a piece in the Financial Times day before yesterday about how Shell, which is a Dutch company, is making massive investments, literally some of the largest investments in the world in solar power, solar technology. So it's happening.
It is happening, and maybe they're turning, you know, some of them are turning around and saying, well, we have to make a lot of money. Even if we, you know, I mean, they could piggyback the whole green movement off of the oil infrastructure we already have and the material sector that we have.
Yeah, what they have to figure out, I mean, this is, you know, the old anecdotes about how Alexander Graham Bell tried to sell his telephone invention to Western Union because they had wires all over America, you know, for the telegraph. And they said, no, we have no interest in that. We're in the telegraph business. And how the Wright brothers, you know, tried to sell their airplane idea to one of the railroad barons. And I think it was Jay Gould or one of those guys. And he said, no, I'm in the railroad business, not realizing that he was actually in the transportation business. And, you know, Western Union not realizing that they were actually in the communications business. And I think that what's happening over at Shell is that they're saying, we are in the energy business, not the fossil fuel business. I mean, we're in the business of making energy with fossil fuels, obviously in a big way right now. But at the end of the day, we're in the energy business. And if the cheapest way to get energy is to get it from the sun or to get it from the wind, we can do that. We can turn that into a business model too. And I suspect you're going to see all the big oil companies start moving in, and other fossil fuel companies start moving in those directions. You know, I think that they're going to have to. Cannon, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Great thoughts. Julie in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Julie, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm just wondering how we can compromise when we're working from two different sets of facts.
It is a problem.
Yeah, and that until I don't know why we can't have legislation that makes it a crime to report opinion as facts.
Well, because then if the person in charge, let's say that there was a law that said that if a reporter reported an opinion, but in fact reported it as a fact, but it was wrong. Right now, the person who would be responsible for enforcing that law would be Donald Trump. And I'm not sure that I want Donald Trump determining what I can say and not say on the air.
Oh, my God. He is in charge of that.
Well, you know, it would be the executive branch. That's the police power of the United States is vested in you know, Article 2, Article 2 in the executive branch. So if you had a...
Well, then we just, you know, instead of trying to get people to, I mean, maybe we just need to tell people you need to do you know, I'm not going to agree with you or disagree with you. I just want you to dig a little deeper and find out the truth before we can have a discussion. Just find the truth.
Yeah, amen.
I mean, this is so frustrating. Okay, but I love your show, and I still want you to run for president.
Okay.
We need one more Democrat.
All right. Thank you, Julie. Thanks for your kind words.
Uh-huh.
Have a great afternoon. Scott in Alameda, California. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So just on a note on that last caller, Justice Thomas is calling to review Sullivan versus New York Times, 1964, to review libel laws. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, to make it easier for public figures like Donald Trump to sue newspapers like the New York Times.
Yeah, and that comes that came out right before the kid from the Catholic school, the MAGA kid, came out with a $250 million suit against the Washington Post. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. It could be a very dangerous time. I don't think that most of the rest of the members of the court are going to go along with Clarence Thomas. I mean,
no,
he is such an outlier.
Yeah, but it's just strange. You know, Thomas is in somebody's pocket. But I called about the idea of, at the end of the Cold War, the bipolar world was shattered and became unipolar, and the ascendant China, and they had their problems with what that meant with Tiananmen massacre and all that, and finding equilibrium however it's been established there with the, you know, with Xi as the dictator for life, you know. But my point is, now we have this fractured fractured world power structure, and one of the main power players now is the Russian mafia. Okay.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
You know, talk about non-state actor. But what is the Russian mafia trying to do? Help build nuclear power plants.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. That was where Flynn was going for the funding for the Saudi power plants, power plants. So think about that. The Russian mafia, they were trying to help the Russian mafia build nuclear power plants.
That's, you know, if true, Scott, that's pretty shocking. I mean, and a lot of the stuff is just starting, and Scott, thank you for the call. A lot of the stuff is just starting to come out. That New York Times report, by the way, yesterday on Trump's war on the prosecutors, his war on the judiciary and the police systems of the United States is a must read. It's just breathtaking what's going on. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's 46 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Let's see here, Rick in Quincy, Massachusetts. Hey, Rick, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. How are you, Rick?
I hope you'll get better, but Trump is Nixon's revenge, kind of like. They were kicked out, and they got back in. And I think Nixon was just opening up the world for corporations, and one of the big deals was China, and then now you got China buying up land. I live in Quincy, and within the past 10 years, the Chinese have bought, I would say, about 40% of the town right now, and they're coming in.
You're talking housing stock or commercial real estate?
Residential, you name it, everything,
wow.
Everything. It's like an invasion, the arrogance of money, and they got it down, and they're just buying everything up. And it goes back to Nixon and also Kissinger and his relationship to the right-wing Israelis who are expanding at the moment right now. And it's just, they're angry. They got kicked out, and now they got the power, and they're not going to give it up. And if they have to give it up, they're going to cause as much damage as these rich white, not even white, it's just the arrogance of money. That's our global emergency.
And, yeah, I don't see what this has to do with right-wing Israelis, but I get your point about China and they are buying up the country. I mean, it's just, it's because, you know, they want a safe place. The very wealthy, a lot of wealth has been created in China, and they want a safe place to put their money. And U.S. real estate is very, very safe, even when you're buying at the top of the market. So, you know, that's what's going on. Cheryl in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Cheryl, what's on your mind today?
Yes, sir. I was calling to ask you a question. Do you think that we're seeing this incident or this possible war in Venezuela by Trump because we never prosecuted the other criminals, you know, like Reagan and Nixon and Bush?
Yes.
41 or 42. So we need to, I think we need to do something about that. Are we going to end up every time a president decides he wants to high ratings or wants to be reelected, he's going to start a war?
Or at least every Republican president has done that basically
right.
since Richard Nixon. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, Ford pardoning Nixon, you know, presaged George Herbert Walker Bush pardoning all of the, you know, Reagan's cronies.
Right.
And
right.
And then, you know, that essentially Clinton didn't pardon anybody out of the Bush administration, but he failed to prosecute them, the George W. Bush administration, for the war crimes that they committed and for the lies that they told America. And basically no president has been held accountable since Nixon. And I think that's wrong. I absolutely agree with you.
Yes, I think we need to do that. You know, Democrats need to pursue that, and Republicans need to stop doing it.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, it would be a good idea. Cheryl, thank you. Very well
thank
said.
You.
We'll be right back with more of your calls right after this. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Bill in Santa Maria, California. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Tom, it's good to talk to you again. How's Louise?
She is well. How's soon, Bill?
Very good. Golfing up a storm as usual.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Tom, I love you. You know, I'm a progressive, but you know...
But we disagree on nuclear power. I know that, Bill.
Could you have one expert on, James Hansen? He is for nuclear power 100%. This was the top guy, the guy that his reports went to the White House and some clack in there changed them, you know, crossed out words. And he was head of the NASA climate program.
Yeah, I know.
And you know, that's just...
Yeah, you're right, just, Bill. And I believe that James Hansen still is supportive of nuclear power. And I continue to think that he's wrong. And I'd be glad to have him on the program. We've invited Hansen on the program many times. He hasn't shown up.
Oh, dear. Okay, another guy, James Lovelock, the Gaia hypothesis that solved the ozone problem.
Yeah.
That James Lovelock figured out what was killing the ozone, chlorofluorocarbons. And he's pro-nuclear. He offered to have the waste buried in his backyard.
Yeah, see, I just, you know, it's not necessary, Bill. We already have a nuclear reactor. We've got this massive fusion reactor 93 million miles away from us. It's producing enough energy every hour to power the planet for a year. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, it takes decades to build a nuclear power plant, and then it takes millennia to deal with the waste. Bill, I'm just, you know, you and I are just going to have to disagree on this, and I need to move along. Bill, thanks for the call. Say hi to Soon for me. Kurt in Beverly Hills, California. Hey, Kurt, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I was listening in the first hour when some guy tried to harangue you about buying an electric car,
right.
but not realizing that you already have one.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that not everyone in America can afford to go out and buy a Tesla, a $100,000 vehicle.
Right, which is not what I have, by the way. I have a plug-in Toyota Prius hybrid. But it's plug-in, I use maybe 1 gallon of gas every 2 months because 90% of the time I'm just driving on pure electricity. Amazing.
Okay, yeah, right, but even they're still expensive cars though, unless you get like a really, really teeny weeny one.
Sure.
And you know. But the reason why I called was that you would be shocked, however, to learn that the common denominator, you'd be surprised how much of the everyday paycheck of the American person does go to Koch Brothers industry owned companies and ALEC corporations, ALEC affiliated corporations.
Oh, sure.
I mean, we're talking ExxonMobil, Chevron, big box stores that I won't name, but they're open 24 hours and have these super centers that are gobbling up mom and pop stores all over America. You'd be shocked, you know, for myself. My one-man war against the Koch brothers and the Republican funding machine is I decided to stop funding my own demise by dropping certain telecommunication companies that are ALEC-affiliated. I even refinanced my home, my mortgage, when I found out that a certain mortgage company was ALEC-affiliated.
Hmm.
I also stopped shopping at a retail shop where I was spending over $500 a month because that retail store has food, clothing, electronics and everything, and most people in America probably shop at the same store. But when I learned that they were responsible for spearheading the Stand Your Ground law that Jeb Bush signed into law back in the early mid-2000s,
yep.
I stopped shopping at that retail store,
yep.
You know, because I realized I was given 90% of my paycheck was going to support Republican-owned businesses. So I encourage everyone to go to alecexposed.org,
yep.
prwatch.org, or opensecrets.org and look at how many companies that we spend our money with are going to Republican-owned businesses that have monopolies. Now, it's going to be hard to get away from them because companies like Charter Communications, they just gobbled up Time Warner Cable. Now, I was able to stay – I didn't mind staying with Time Warner back in 2016 because they had dropped ALEC. So I said, okay, fine. You know, I'll go ahead and pay for the internet. But now Charter has bought up Time Warner and has jacked up their prices 300% on me.
Oh man, yeah. This is happening all over the country, Kurt. And it's because actually of a policy the Supreme Court adopted in the 1970s, based on an idea that Robert Bork had, which is a longer discussion, obviously, than we have time for since we're just hitting the end of the show. But I will be getting into one of these days soon. I'm actually writing a book about that right now. And boy, amazing times. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. So please get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.